How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil. We have a new studio here.
We have a new studio, and here we are, and our sound is great, and that's because we have two technicians. I tell you, this is a luxury. It's like having a pilot and a co-pilot. So, well, here we are. It's the eve of the Punch and Judy show, according to Russell Brand, and it might be Punch and Judy, and but that's tomorrow. Today on the Taylor Report, we will be talking to Zafar Bangesh, a very popular guest, because he knows what he's talking about. That's the kind that we like to have. And that'll be at 5:30, roughly. We're going to be asking him about this issue of Kashmir, sort of a forgotten or lost issue for people in North America who don't keep track of these matters. But it's one that contains great danger and to which the world should be alert, because not only does it involve the issue of the self-determination of the people of Kashmir, who are quite numerous, but it also involves two powers, both of whom have acquired nuclear weapons, who are not very fond of each other, that is India, Pakistan. And you have also superpowers, but particularly that one being the principal one, being the United States, who was involved in making sure that both of those states acquired nuclear weapons. By the way, Canada, too, busted its tail to make sure that they both had all the things they might need, and a lot of money was made here. But now we have this small issue that could become a very big one. So we will be talking to Zafar about that. There was an event this past weekend. I was a guest at that, so I'm really interested in it. Otherwise, we're hoping, we're going to work on this. We're hoping to have some portion of an interview with a deceased investigator from the United Nations, Mr. Michael Hurry. And if we don't do it this week, we will definitely do it in the future. Because his name came up in an October 25 Globe and Mail story by Jeffrey York and Michelle Zilio, where the core of the focus of the front page story in the Globe was an interview with the Canada's most famous judge, Louise Arbour, in which she made really significant revelations about the events of Rwanda and the investigation into them by the UN, in which she was a major player. And she said that, yes, it is indeed true that the assassination of the two presidents, the African presidents, the president of Burundi and the president of Rwanda on April the 6th, 1994, there was substantial, credible evidence that had been carried out by the present president of Rwanda, who is never, ever asked about that, or when he is. She acknowledged, may have been the perpetrator. But she said, and this was the most important part, that she couldn't go into that, and that she had been prevented from doing investigations because that president, Kagame, had himself interfered with her work. And indeed, it was far beyond the matter of the assassination of the president. She said that, frankly, her work was blocked. Interfered with by Paul Kagame and his government. She left out an important detail, which was spoken to by Tiffen Dixon on our show the same last Monday, which is that the United States stood behind Paul Kagame when he ordered the United Nations not to bother him and not to investigate any crimes that his people might have carried out, including his own. He's very jealous of what he does, and he has a copyright on that. At any rate, so that's what. And then the name Michael Hourigan came up, and in the Globe and Mail interview, October 25th, Wednesday, And she was asked, what about Michael Hourigan? Wasn't he your investigator, and didn't he look into this? And she said, well, she'd only met him once, and that she had felt and said that there was this was not something they could do. Well, of course, now, 22 years later, she's sharing with us why this is not something they could do. She did not tell him that, or at least that's our understanding. But listeners of the Taylor Report will know that we have ourselves spoken to Michael Hourigan. Michael Hourigan was, I would call him a dear friend by the time I had probably four interviews, I'm just guessing. And he, like this program, thought this was very important. He's a lawyer in Australia. Unfortunately, Michael died at a relatively young age of a heart attack, and we lost an important witness. But he did not pass out without saying what he knew. And he shared it with us, and he shared it with the world. Incidentally, he was once a witness at the at Congress. He and another very important name, I'll tell our listeners so that you know, if you want to do your own homework, please do. His name was James Lyon. James Lyon is a former FBI agent, and he was probably the most qualified and a very important figure in the investigation. He and Michael Hourigan worked together. So when often people speak of Michael Hourigan, they forget that we're not talking about one man. We're talking about a team of investigators, and one of the leaders of the team was James Lyon, the FBI figure. Now, he, if you has spoken a few times publicly, incidentally, we've tried to get him on the show, and perhaps we will at some point, but he is on the record. He did speak in front of a committee at the United States Congress where he affirmed what Michael Hourigan said. I don't know if anybody's going to ask Louise Arbour if she also talk to James Lyon about this. But we can't allow this to become a matter of one individual, two individuals, many, many people involved, hundreds of people actually. But in terms of the investigation, there were many investigators. And so, as I say, we are hoping to be able to reproduce part of that. Phil and I are going to take up this matter of the American election and the quest by Jill Stein to win 5% of the vote. I'm going to urge you to go to the site of our leader, Susan Sarandon. Can you listen? We're the envy of anybody. This is a movement I want to belong to. Susan Sarandon is our leader. If you go to her Twitter account, she explains that it's very important that Jill Stein get that 5%. She says we need new parties. Obviously, the American people are in a terrible mood. They don't like the choices they're being presented with. Jill Stein is a remarkable, wonderful individual who says all the things we care about. The Dakota Access Pipeline, $15 minimum wage, single-payer health care system, the forgiveness of student loans so that people could get on with their lives and not be indentured servants from here to eternity. This is the wonderful Jill Stein.
And she also says that the U.S. military budget should be cut in half and close foreign bases. That's never been debated in any presidential election ever.
And stop bombing people. Yeah. And so just as our leader, Susan Sarandon, says, we need to vote for what will save the country, not for varieties of poison. And by the way, she said the well has been poisoned. I'm using her term by the Democratic executive committee of the Democratic Party. She says they showed that they cheat. They showed that they're corrupt, and it's there for anybody to see. Donna Brazile would be a great illustration of it. But also how they handled the Bernie Sanders challenge. We know they've got Bernie as a hostage. We're not going to get him back. I think they've got him. But the rest of us are still free, as, again, our leader Susan Sarandon has pointed out. We're going to take a brief break, listen to a bit of I'm waiting for an agreement. See a little bit of Lee Morgan so that we can see if we can arrange Horrigan. If we can't arrange Horrigan, we will come back and, as I say, deal with this presidential matter. So we'll take this break. And we're back to Taylor Report. We're working heavily to get Michael Horrigan, but Phil Conlon has some announcements. We have the science and...
Let me come back to that one.
Because Phil has ads lined up.
It disappeared off my screen here. I do want to say that next week, on Tuesday the 15th, Seeds of Hope, Creating a Future in the Shadows, a book launch at a different book list. That's Tuesday the 15th at 6 p.m. at 746 Bathurst. And also Thursday the 17th, the reception and presentation of Tiki Mercury Clark's Lift Every Voice and Sing the Roots of Gospel Music, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. That sounds like a big event at Markham House, 6:30 p.m. on Thursday the 17th.
Thursday the 17th.
Right.
And Tiki Mercury Clark.
That's right. A legendary voice.
Yes, indeed. Yes. I love that kind of music.
I'll be back in a second with that other announcement.
The other one? We only have the two.
The Science for Peace one.
All right. I know that it's coming up in a few days. Apropos of this election, I would stress that this is important, this matter of the Jill Stein, who's waged a terrific fight. She went to Dakota, by the way, and was in North Dakota, to be precise, and pointed out, of course, like everyone else did, that they say the pipeline is not any great threat, the one that is running along near the territory of the Sioux people. However, when it was going to run alongside the white city of Bismarck, they didn't think it was a good idea, even though they say, oh, there's no danger. Well, they seem to think there might be, because they decided to move it away from Bismarck and toward Native Americans, who already historically have had a number of negative experiences involving people like Custer. So in the name of Sitting Bull, we are asking you to take another side. And of our leader, Susan Sarandon. What were you going to say, Phil?
Yes, I have that announcement for Science for Peace. It'll be Wednesday at 7 p.m. at University College, room UC52, Towards This Generation's New Left, Impediments and Possibilities, by a lecture by Professor Emeritus Richard Sandbrook.
Thank you. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. If I'm not mistaken, we have... No, we're working on the voice of Michael. By the way, don't worry. We are in possession of it. And if any of these conscientious, wonderful people like the Globe and Mail and others wish to hear it, we have a discussion with Michael Horrigan. And we have, of course, also spoken with one of his fellow investigators, Amadou Dem, who was an intelligence man working with General Dallaire. You've all heard of General Dallaire. He's back in the news. And we expect to have this. Just again, to speak of this, the 5% point is very important. I don't think anybody progressive cares about peace and issues such as the Dakota Pipeline, opposing it, would want... would understand how important it is to have parties that do address the issues that matter to you, like the Green Party does. Now, but to get in the debates, they have this little thing where you have to have 5% of the vote. So Jill Stein needs those votes. Don't give them up to the Punch and Judy show. Go and vote for Stein, so that we have some choices. I can't understand why people, still believe in bleeding. You know, they cut themselves.
Well,
she says,
consider a vote for the Green Party and for herself as an investment in the future of the political process, because the current setup doesn't work for anybody other than the 1%.
Right? Being the ones we say we don't want.
Right, and the ones who keep telling you that you have no choice but to vote for A or B, right?
Now, I think we're going to take a little – this is our Horrigan experiment. If it's ready to go, we will play it. This is Mr. Horrigan of the United Nations.
knocked out Mickey Mantle at Yankees Fantasy Camp, who was spit on by Keith Hernandez, or so he thought.
Know who that was, by the way. This again, this must be fun listening to Taylor Report. It's a little, what was that British comedy group? Anyway, that was the voice of Dave Zirin, who we used to, frequently have on the show. Dave Zirin writes sports column for Nation Magazine. At any rate, that bit of comedy you can place on my shoulders. Let's go back to discussing what this issue of why you should vote for Jill Stein and the Green Party. When I say you, whoever that is out there who can.
Well, our American listeners.
Yeah. We do have American listeners. And we have people who have cousins. This is the Cousin Society. One of the big, great Canadian films is My American Cousin. And, by the way, Churchill always referred to the U.S. as our cousins. And they do need help. Let's talk also about some of those who've disappointed us in this. Michael Moore, by the way, is making an absolute fool of himself. For 12 years, Moore has complained and griped and said, screamed Flint and put on shows. And now he's an absolute chill for Hillary. And that's a sorry situation. Another one that I'm really amused by is the great all-time anarcho-socialist believer in collectivism and communes, Mr. Noam Chomsky, who we're always told, his politics is so pure, he's never been able to endorse anybody or do anything. And it turns out that every 4 years, somebody has figured this out, every 4 years he turns into a crank Democrat. He says, they own everything, they dictate, you're just a pawn, you believe the media. And then it comes time to vote and he always says, I'm with the Democrats. I find that embarrassing. I mean, not that I never, in a sense of what he ultimately philosophically represents, I've never been able to get to those depths. You really have to have one of those belt systems to sink down and figure out what it is that makes him work. But we do know that he's actually a crank Democrat, because when the chips are down, he will tell you to go with what he identifies as a liberal Democrat. How we would know they were liberal, given the absence of evidence, I don't know. But that is what he has done. And there are others. But there are also these wonderful, outstanding people. Chris Hedges has written a very nice piece for, what's it called, Dig? I forget, with Dig This or something magazine. And he's written an excellent article, One Ought to Support Jill Stein. You can just put Chris Hedges and you'll find out. And I say, more power to them. It's elections tend to make fools of people. The great Russell Brand is back, as I mentioned before. He's posted a comment against both Trump and Clinton. But he would be a good illustration of what can happen to you, because he, at the last election in Britain, after leading mass rallies and calling on the people to, do their kind of thing on the guy with the mask, who we just celebrated him, the one who was going to blow up Parliament.
Oh, Guy Fawkes.
Yes, Guy Fawkes. Yeah, we're all supposed to be Guy Fawkes people.
Yeah.
And then he turned around and endorsed the Labour Party candidate, and everybody blushed because they were disappointed. Well, I think he seems to be trying to recover from that, and good for him. So, anyway, it's been illustrative. It's an additional subject I think we might want to talk about. Next week on the show, we're going to be talking to Danny Haifong, who writes at Black Agenda Report. And there are more and more meetings being called saying, why isn't the left opposing the attacks and planned attacks on Syria and the individual they're identifying correctly as the most dangerous is Hillary Clinton, who is committed to a no-fly zone and to corridors, which require tanks in order to set up a corridor, and who acknowledges in kind of her little shrug of the shoulders way that Syrians will die. I mean, that's what happens when you're doing good things. So she says that there, you know, there's that danger. And so some on the left have begun to have call meetings. There's one being called in this city, I think, actually. It's a Science for Peace meeting. That's what they're going to be discussing, is the left in Syria. And I recommend Danny Haifong's article in the Black Agenda Report, where he takes up the issue that we did on this show last week, perhaps 2 weeks ago, with Stephen Gowans, about the counterpunch writer Eric Dreitzer. And Eric Dreitzer did one of those wonderful somersaults and landed on the ground because he was trying to strike a neutral position between those who are still enthusiastic for the unavailable and the unfound moderate rebels of Syria and the and those opposed to the war and opposed to U.S. bombing and to U.S. intervention. And Eric and Danny Haifong's position, it has many elements in it, or several elements to it. But the one that I liked most, and when we do speak to him, we want to address, he finds that there's a lot of racism involved. He notices, points out that there's this idea that somehow enlightenment and brilliance and expertise seems to exist in Paris and London and New York, and that the information pool from which they derive their positions is all Western sourced, so that they will quote to each other Human Rights Watch or Amnesty or a liberal ex-congressman or such a person. And then they say, or a New York Times news report. And he points out that this works because they don't have any respect, can you say that
word?
A smidgen. Maybe an iota. They don't have any respect at all for a Syrian-based source or one in Africa or the Middle East who explains the position, say, of the Syrian government. That's just totally, utterly, completely discounted and treated with smirks and condescension. And that is, I would agree with him, that's the poison. There is the assumption that white Europeans, it's unstated, but they're the only ones whose voice counts.
I can say, Phil, that I have not yet seen any article about Syria in a Western journal in which the journalist is in Syria. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, they don't. And a matter of fact, they don't need to be in Syria, to be authorities on Syria. They already know best what is best for all of us. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. By the way, next week we are going to be fundraising, and there's nothing that our listeners love more than when we raise funds, because they take CIUT is great, and they support the Taylor Report, so we get them.